From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, January 2nd, 2019. And on this day, the historic inauguration taking place in Augusta. Some Maine school districts scrambling to find money to support homeless students. That's ahead in a moment. Some Maine school districts were shocked last fall to discover that they had been denied federally funded grants designed to help support homeless students. The State Department of Education attributes the denials to what it calls a scoring issue. The department reopened the grant process this past October, but as Robbie Feinberg reports, only one district has since received a conditional grant, leaving others scrambling to find the funds elsewhere.
Each year, the federal government distributes about $70 million in so-called McKinney-Vento grants to local school districts that's intended to be used to help educate homeless students. Maine receives about $200,000 of that annually to help support the roughly 2,500 homeless students in the state. Bangor Superintendent Betsy Webb says last year, $40,000 from those funds enabled her district to hire a social worker to specifically work with homeless students and help them navigate problems such as food insecurity and lack of transportation.
And so by helping with those needs, then what we're able to do is have that focus on academics.
In 2017, eight districts, including Lewiston, Augusta, and Portland, received McKinney-Vento funds from the State Department of Education. But this year, those subgrants have proven to be much more difficult to obtain. Last summer, the DOE released a request for proposals for the funds, but withdrew it in September, citing a, quote, scoring issue. The application process was restarted in October, but in December, the agency announced that only one applicant, the Bangor School Department, had received a conditional grant. Lewiston Superintendent Bill Webster says the delays and loss of funds have been frustrating.
It just seems they're creating hoops that we and other districts have to jump through that seem to be an unnecessary impediment to meeting the needs of these students.
The Department of Education says that part of the reason only one school received funding were new criteria in this year's grant application that were perhaps more focused than in past years. In an email, DOE spokesperson Rachel Paling says that when the department reviewed academic data in 2017, it saw that homeless students were, quote, persistently lagging far behind their peers, and that the McKinney-Vento grants, quote, did not appear to improve those outcomes. Paling says in its latest grant application process, the department asked districts to think about how to address those problems and to write a detailed assessment of the needs within the district. Only the Bangor School Department scored high enough in its needs assessment to receive funds. Lewiston Superintendent Bill Webster says the federal grant has traditionally supported a position within his high school's Store Next Door project, which assists homeless students. Without continued funds, Webster says the district, which serves almost 200 homeless students, has been forced to turn to local taxpayers.
And, you know, at the end of the day, there may be other things that we don't do that we deem important, but perhaps not as critical as serving the needs of this most needy population.
For other districts, meanwhile, the denial has meant delaying new programs to counsel homeless students. Erica Mazzeo is the Director of Curriculum, Instruction, and Assessment for RSU 57, which covers a number of towns in southwest Maine near Sanford. She says supporting homeless students is particularly challenging in her rural district, where students are largely spread out, with limited access to transportation and job opportunities. Mazzeo says RSU 57 was hoping to receive a grant to allow teachers and staff to work with homeless students after school and during the summer.
We know we have the people in place to do this work. We know we have the needs. We just don't have all the funds we need to put it all together.
The State Department of Education says it will offer another opportunity for schools to apply for the remaining funds after districts have had time to appeal their most recent denials. Mazzeo says her district plans to meet with the department on its application and hopes to receive a grant in the next round of funding.
While we can refine the application itself, our students will be waiting.
Paling with the Maine Department of Education says the agency is still, quote, 100% committed to getting McKinney-Vento funds to local districts and wants to ensure the funds are used in a focused way that will help homeless students finish high school. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
History will be made tonight when Democrat Janet Mills is officially sworn into office as Maine's 75th governor, the first woman to ever hold the office. Mills comes from a family with a long record of public service. Her grandfather served in the Maine Senate. Her father was also a legislator and a U.S. attorney for Maine. Her sister Dora was the former head of the Maine Center for Disease Control, and her older brother Peter is a former Republican legislator who now runs the Maine Turnpike Authority. But despite her political pedigree, Mills' journey to the Blaine House has been a complicated one. Susan Sharon reports.
Janet Mills never envisioned the day that she'd be governor. As a child whose parents were close friends with Senator Margaret Chase Smith and who once memorized Smith's famous Declaration of Conscience speech for a high school contest that she won, Mills says she never intended to pursue a political career, nor did she think she'd follow in the footsteps of her father and become a lawyer. Instead, she dropped out of Colby College during her sophomore year and headed out to San Francisco.
I was a bit of a rebel. Didn't want to go straight through school or have any big career goal to begin with. So, you know, it was in the mid-60s, late-60s, and so much was happening in the world, and I just wanted to see other things in other places, like a lot of young people.
Mills worked as a waitress in an insurance firm and as a psychiatric aide in a mental health hospital. She resisted her father's initial suggestion that she become a nurse. But along the way, she took classes in a wide range of subjects and eventually went back to school full-time at the University of Massachusetts Boston. She also spent a year in Paris, where she learned to speak French.
I had to. They speak it there. And it was less expensive to go to Paris for a year, including travel, than to live in Boston for another year. So I said, this is for me.
Mills returned to the States, worked a couple more jobs, including at a Washington, D.C. law firm where she translated patents from French to English. She also escaped an abusive relationship and eventually returned to Maine to go to law school. She says it was her father who gave her a necessary nudge at a time when she wasn't feeling good about herself and when many women were working as secretaries and office assistants.
He just gave me the confidence to think I actually could do that. And when he said I could do it, I kind of knew maybe I could.
It was the first class that had a significant number of women, and Mills says she knew early on that law school was the right fit for her. The rest, as they say, is history. Mills went on to work in the criminal division of the Attorney General's office, where she was the only woman. She was the first woman elected district attorney in Maine and New England, prosecuting crimes in Franklin, Oxford, and Androscoggin counties. Mills became the first woman in Maine to become attorney general in 2009. And this week, just days after celebrating her 71st birthday, she becomes the first woman to serve as governor.
She had a very hilly, windy journey, just as the roads of rural Maine are.
Dr. Dora Ann Mills is the younger sister of the governor-elect, who says she's proud of Janet for two reasons: for being the first Maine governor from Franklin County, where their ancestors go back several generations, and for being the first woman governor. But even more important, Dora Mills says, is the fact that Janet's path has been bumpy. She overcame struggles. As a teenager, she spent a year in a body cast, confined mostly to a hospital bed in the family's living room, to correct a potentially disabling curvature of the spine. And in her 30s, she married a widower who had not just one, but five daughters, ranging in age from 4 to 16. It was a decision, Janet Mills has said, was probably the craziest and best thing she ever did.
She gives us a role model of somebody who has learned from each stage of her journey and moved forward. And I think that's also very exciting to me, that you can also become governor of Maine.
I am incredibly proud to introduce you to my mother and the next governor of the state of Maine, Janet Mills.
When Janet Mills boogied onto the stage on election night, the one person missing from her celebration was her husband, who passed away 4 years ago from the effects of a stroke. Mills says the experience of caring for him toward the end of his life helped shape her views on the health care system and on the importance of Medicaid expansion, one of her priorities along the campaign trail. She pledged to chart a new course for Maine, and she told the crowd that night she would think anew, act anew, and begin anew. Eliza Townsend of the Maine Women's Lobby, which Mills co-founded, says the new governor will change the way women are perceived in leadership.
For me, it's perhaps a combination of a return to civility and treating people with respect and being thoughtful about approaching issues and seeing that embodied. It was really fun yesterday to see the pictures of her moving into the Blaine House. They were so human. Again, it just made it very real that we've got a woman in charge.
Her gender really doesn't make a difference in her ability to do the job.
Representative Kathleen Dillingham of Oxford is the House Republican leader.
It's, you know, the same in any position in government. It's wonderful, it's empowering, but we all have the same abilities to carry out the same task.
Dillingham says she and her colleagues are looking forward to working with Governor Mills, interested in the policy changes she'll propose, and she says they'll keep an open mind as long as they're fiscally responsible. Mills, meanwhile, continues to downplay her record as a trailblazer and the effort it took to get this far.
Some of it's accidental, honestly. In my book, I ran because I felt I was the most qualified person for the job, and I hope that history supports me in that. When I take the oath of office, and when I step into that governor's office, the door will be open. There will be an open door, an open mind, and an open heart. That's the way I feel about it. That's the way it should be.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And for Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Wednesday, January 2nd, 2019. Thanks to Jennifer Mitchell, Patty White, Keith Shortall, Mark Simpson, Steve Missler, and our digital team, I'm Ed Morin.